Okay, Scott says you can't join, so let me get him down and get him back up. Okay, I guess in the meantime, let's kick it off. I mean, as I was speaking about earlier on my show, I guess the halving's now behind us. The leverage is flushed out. We've had a total market reset, so to speak, if you want to look at it from a leverage point of view. If you want to look at it from the RSI point of view, it looks like the RSIs have cooled down. You know, on the weekly, the stochastic is probably very close to what is traditionally known as the undersold level, which is below 20. And I guess probably what we need to talk about is, you know, whether people think it's time for the next leg up, or whether this is just, you know, a sideways movement for now, and potentially there is another leg down. So I guess that's probably what we're going to be speaking about most of the time today. I see Mario has joined, which is quite a good surprise. I see Scott's trying to join. But I think while we are waiting for them, Peter, maybe you can elaborate because I think you're more the charts man.
Yeah, I mean, this is just kind of a normal correction to me. I think that's my highest probability read. We're just kind of drifting in the sideways. Of course, I've really never felt like the move up above 70 represented kind of quote unquote a new high. I just still see this market kind of stalled at where we were in April 21, November 21. Yeah, a few thousand dollars higher, but you know, that's not a big significance to me. So we're back challenging the old highs. And so the question is, what's next? And of course, we've seen the halving, and in past cycles, the halving has been almost exactly the halfway point between the low of the bull market cycle and the eventual high of the bull market cycle. So we've seen the halving, which if we go by past script, says that we'll see a final high in this bull market cycle somewhere in August, September of 2025, and we go up from here. But, you know, on one hand, I'm bullish. I see nothing on the charts that would convince me, either in a daily chart or a weekly chart, that there's big pause for concern. The only concerns I have is that we really have not made a new high as far as I see the market relative to the 2021 highs. And so we're right where we were 3 years ago. And despite the fact we're right where we were 3 years ago, the conventional wisdom is this market keeps going. Whenever there's a strong conventional wisdom and everybody's thinking the same way, for me, that's always a reason to step back, reappraise, and see if I can create a narrative which says that, well, maybe there's some bad men lurking in the shadows. And for me, I can create a narrative that says Bitcoin is not going to go straight up from here, but in fact going to have a much longer corrective phase, possibly even all the way back into the mid-40s. But, you know, for now, as long as the moving averages remain up, I remain long. But nevertheless, I created kind of a 25% probability that the markets have either topped or have close to top for this entire bull market cycle. And in fact, we will have for the first time a case where the halving is close to the end of the move and not halfway into the end of the move. So that's my read from here.
Thank you, Peter.
Go ahead.
Sir,
Mario, can you? I just want to make sure we can hear each other because it keeps kicking co-hosts down. And,
yes.
Okay. Good. Go ahead.
Did you? But so Peter just said the halving is closer to the end of the cycle rather than middle of the cycle. So, Peter, you're saying that the cycle will be therefore shorter than previous cycles? I cannot hear Peter now. Can you hear him, Scott? No, he's muted. Peter, are you there?
Yeah.
Scott, are you there? Yeah, you're there, Peter. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, in past cycles, the halving has been almost exactly, if you go by a weekly or daily bar, in, within a few bars, daily bars of each other, the halfway between the start of the bull market and the end of the bull market. I mean, right dot in the middle. And that's been true in every bull market cycle, the 2010 to 11 bull cycle, 11 to 13, 15 to 17, 18 to 21, right in the middle. And so, whenever people just assume things are always going to be the same and the cycle's going to repeat, and then oftentimes the cycle does repeat. And that is my highest probability, in fact, for this current bull market cycle. It's how I'm positioned. It's how I'm invested. That we are only halfway to the end of this bull market cycle that we're in that started back in late 2023. But I always get concerned when everybody's singing from the same page and the same verse of the hymn of the hymnal. And that seems to be the case now.
But Peter, why are you concerned? And I know everyone likes to say, the kind of cliches. When everyone believes something is probably wrong, that's cliche number one. Cliche number two is this time it's different, but it never is. I just think both of them are just dangerous generalizations. So in this case, Peter, when you say I'm a bit concerned because everyone's expecting this to be in the early or mid stages of the bull cycle, but why would you be concerned? Doesn't that mean that it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy? So if everyone thinks we're in the early in the middle of the bull cycle, everyone will act accordingly, and it ends up materializing. Even this is how history repeats itself, is people kind of look at history and expect it to repeat itself, and because of these expectations, it repeats itself.
I'm invested against that scenario. That's where my money is. I'm long Bitcoin. I'm placing a 75% probability that in fact it does repeat. History will repeat itself. All I am saying is I'm at that stage where I'm willing to place 25% odds that it's going to be very different. So my question is, can I find the internal statistics, mathematics within the market that might even allow for a 25% probability that, in fact, it is going to be different this time around? I'm a Bayesian probability guy. I want to look at, where can I be wrong? What's the scenario by which I'm wrong? What's the narrative by which I'm wrong? And I actually have that narrative now. I can find those internal math within the market that suggests that maybe this time is different. Let me explain what that is. When you look at the 2010 to 2011 bull market and you measure it from the very low price of that bull cycle to the high price of that bull cycle, we saw a gain during that bull market, which was about a 3,200x move. Now, when we look at the 2011 to 2013 bull market from low to high, we had a gain of approximately 570x. It was a 570x move. Now, so in other words, that move relative to a power ratio was at about 20% of the magnitude of the previous bull market cycle. Now we come into the 2015 to 2017 bull market cycle, and from low to high, we had a move which represented approximately a 120x advance. Again, approximately a 20% of the magnitude on a power ratio of the 2011 to 2013 bull market. Now, 2018 to 2021, from low to high, we had an advance which represented approximately a 22-23x move. Again, the exact same power ratio, a move which represented approximately 20% of the magnitude of the previous bull cycle. So if I go by there and say, okay, history is going to repeat itself again, all of a sudden I have a narrative which says that this bull market has already seen a move which is consistent with the magnitude of previous power ratio moves. And we could see a high then when we look at the low of this bull market cycle back in late 2022, which could top out in the area of $75,000 to $85,000. And so, yes, history does repeat itself. History does become a self-fulfilling prophecy. But suddenly I can start building the building blocks, which says, okay, I'm going to leave myself open to consider another narrative. And so that's simply what I'm saying. So all of a sudden...
I'm with you. Sorry, Peter, just one quick question. So if you base it on that 20% of the previous bull cycle, does that, would you say that if history does repeat itself based on those exact numbers, would we hit a peak of 75 to 80%? Is that what you said?
Would we get a no? No, I'm saying if we take that same power.
He just dropped out. Fuck. Can you hear him, Scott?
Is Peter
he's here. Peter. Just again, I want to ask you the question. So when you talked about the 20% of the previous, so the upside is each cycle is like 20% of the previous cycle. If you go by that rule, what would be the peak in this cycle? If we go by that same rule, because it seems to have repeated itself for the last three cycles.
Approximately a 5x move. 5x move from the low that we made in November 2022.
So what would that be? What would that be, 5x of that?
75 to 80 grand.
82,000.
So it is 70.
Yeah, 75 okay. to 85. And we've been
okay.
there.
That's a fair point. Okay, I want to go to Ryan because I know, Ryan, you've been in Paris and Dubai and doing some crazy shit. Congratulations on Gummy.
I've been launching meme coins, man, lighting the world on fire.
That was the craziest thing I've ever done in my life.
Man, I think I have balls, but I would not dare launch a meme coin and put my name behind it. Just too way too scary for me. Yeah, you did it, and succeeded doing so.
You say that you wouldn't do it. We assessed the risks, and we kind of broke down the risks quite well. So what we said is, look, I think the biggest risk of any coin, whether it's a meme or a project, is if the project fails, right? And specifically, if the project fails, then a lot of questions get asked to the people who raised cash. And they say, look, you know, like you raised $5 million, what did you spend it on? So the first rule that we made was we said, we're not going to take cash from anyone and we're actually going to fund the whole thing ourselves. So, I mean, what people don't know is that meme coins actually require quite a bit of funding. Like to distribute meme coins to, we had to distribute to over 100,000 holders and in an airdrop that costs money to create what's called the liquidity pool, which is effectively how the exchanges trade. Because remember, the exchanges have to have both sides of a trade. They need to have the coin and they need to have the other side, which is the USD or the Solana or whatever it is that you're trading against. And someone has to actually front that money, put that money up. So it ended up costing us a couple of hundred grand, which we had to put up in liquidity across the various platforms. And so what we said is, look, rule one is no one's ever going to pay for this airdrop, this meme coin. Rule two is that we're going to, no one at Banta is going to be, no Banta, no influencer, no nothing is going to be given, no tokens are going to be given to anyone at Banta. No one's going to own no influencers. I mean, you know, testament is that you guys are my partners. And I mean, you could probably attest to the fact that you've never been offered any allocations. And in fact, if you look on chain, no one got any type of influencer allocations or marketing allocations or any kind of allocation on Gummy. Not even me. In fact, the only Gummy that I have, I got 500 tokens because I was farming on Banta Bubbles. I was using the Banta Bubbles app and that gave me 500 tokens. And that's, to be honest, that's the net holding that I have in Gummy at the moment. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, so we said, look, no raising money. So no one must ever pay for this. No one at Banta must ever get coins, so they can never be like, oh, you got coins early and stuff like that. And then the truth is, when I launched a coin, I actually went down a rabbit hole. And, for me to be able to launch a meme coin, I had to go down this rabbit hole of how meme coins are actually launched. And what I realized is actually that even though meme coins are launched through a process called a fair launch, actually the game is completely, completely, completely unfair. And it's actually completely rigged. And it's actually completely rigged against the retail investor. So I always thought that meme coins were a casino, except that the casino was like much more fair than being in a normal casino. What I learned when I went down the rabbit hole of trying to launch a coin was I actually learned that this whole game is rigged. And I'll explain to you how the game is rigged. So what people do is they do a fair launch. And what that means is they take 100% of the tokens and they pair it with a very small amount of Solana. So let's say $10,000 worth of Solana with 100 million tokens, just or a billion tokens. And so the price of each token, if you can buy it directly from the liquidity pool, is 100 Solana or, let's say $10,000 worth of SOL divided by a billion coins. And so what generally happens, as soon as the coin launches, insiders, founders, normal snipers, insiders and founders, what they do is they deploy sniping bots and they snipe up a large part of the supply, sometimes even up to 80 or 90% of the supply. And they distribute it amongst like 100 wallets or 1,000 wallets. So you like it just looks like it's spread everywhere. And then now it's not always insiders and founders. There's actually a good businesses that are actually bots on Solana, which basically on every single block on Solana, they snipe all the new launches. They just snipe the tokens. They buy them first. And some of them sell them within 10 seconds. Some of them sell them within 10 minutes. Some of them sell them when the project matures. And so what I realized was that 80% of the big projects out there are actually sniped and sniped by insiders. And so then I had to go down a rabbit hole of actually trying to protect the community or our token, well, not our token, but the token that we created from being sniped. And so that took me a couple of weeks to work out. And eventually what we realized was that the best way to beat the snipers was to snipe the token ourselves and then to give it back to the community. So to be transparent about it and say, hey, we employed a sniping technology. We sniped the token ourselves and we're taking those tokens and we're going to give them back to the community instead of the tokens landing up in the hands of bad, you know, let's call it, you know, unscrupulous operators or whatever else.
And hey, so go ahead. Yeah. I was just going to say, how do you outsnipe the snipers?
So I'll tell you quite simply, you have perfect information. As the launcher of the contract, you have perfect information about when your block is going to be launched. You know exactly.
You have the contract address, you have the timing of the listing, the liquidity pool, when it's going to be added, everything.
So what you do is you basically snipe in the same block, which is what everyone does it. Everyone does it. It's just most of them are anonymous devs and they're not transparent about it. And then later on, they use those funds to incentivize influencers and whatever else. That was a lesson that I learned. I mean, I took a lot of consulting and I spoke to some of the biggest launchers in the space. I'm not going to mention names because I just think that in this game, they probably don't want to be known. And ultimately, what we did was we decided that the best way to beat the snipers was to actually snipe ahead of them and just hand the token straight back to the community and kind of say, look, we didn't want the tokens to land up in the wrong hands. And so, look, it was an amazing learning curve. The token is trading at $175 million fully diluted market cap. It was at $250 million yesterday. Now it's a community token. I mean, we don't have any tokens. As I said, I've got 500 tokens that I managed to claim from the claim portal. And now it's really up to the community to.
What's the business strategy behind? So two questions, but ask the tough questions, Ryan. I'm not sure you can answer. And we haven't talked about this privately beyond like, hey, congratulations and fuck you for always being ahead of me. It's pretty much our whole discussion. The question I have for you is twofold. The first is, what were the total costs for obviously the liquidity pool, adding liquidity to the liquidity pool, the distribution, the airdrops, any marketing costs? And then the second.
Very hard to say.
Okay,
the first question, very hard to say, and I'll tell you why. Number one, so I put up over $100,000 in terms of liquidity. Number two, I paid some dev costs along the way, and some of those dev costs were absolutely wasted. So it's like, it's not like I knew what I was doing and I devved with a good roadmap. We devved some stuff and then it fell away and stuff like that. Some of the devs, we agreed to just give them a very tiny allocation of the tokens. We like 0.1% of the token supply for helping us dev what we needed devved. We didn't realize that that it's going to explode to $200 million market cap. So, I mean, it's very hard to say, but I reckon if you want to do a proper job and you want to add the liquidity yourself, probably around $200,000.
And that's including liquidity?
Yeah, including liquidity.
Just for anyone listening, number one, of course, I don't own any gummy. Well, no one got it privately. And second, I didn't buy any off the market because we don't usually do that. We usually just come in and do private deals or OTC deals. That's our general rule. So that's number one. Number two is me and Ryan haven't really spoken about this much, except, you know, congratulations, kiss, kiss, hug, hug, and finger. The second question, Ryan, is the what's the business model? You're a very smart business person. And we've known each other for a while. What's the business strategy behind this?
So let me maybe just walk you through how Gummy started. And then I think once you understand that, I'll explain to you what happened. And I'll be
Ryan, just one last thing for the audience. Ryan launched a meme token called Gummy. I've known about it for a while and watched the launch, the whole process, and now sitting at just under $200 million FTV, which is pretty damn fucking good. So we're just kind of digging into this, and we'll go back to the market discussions with our panel. But I'm just very curious on how Ryan did.
So I'll give you a quick background as to how Gummy was launched. It was a meme coin season. I wasn't a big believer in meme coins in the beginning. I had an about turn when I realized that meme coins were actually a prediction market for culture. And it's probably the most accurate prediction market for culture. And we've had many discussions about this. I then, went on a Saturday. I took a weed gummy, I'll be honest, for full transparency. And I went to jump into a jumping trampoline park with my kids. And just after we were jumping in the trampoline park, on the management group, on the Banter management group, someone posted a video of how a guy went step by step and created a meme coin. And the meme coin was called Hammy, H-A-M-I, and the guy does a really good job of explaining how he launched the meme coin. So I was on the effects of a gummy, so I was a bit baked, and I said, guys, wouldn't this be a great idea if we taught our community how to make a meme coin? And of course, the Banter management group was split. Some of them said, do it. Some of them said, look, it's controversial. People will create meme coins. Meme coins are bad for you. My attitude was, and maybe again, it was the effect of the gummy. It was like, look, learning to make an NFT in this day and age or a collection of NFTs is a skill. It's like learning to make websites in the days when websites weren't mainstream. And I think that meme coins are actually a better community creator than an NFT because an NFT is very exclusive. So either you can buy it early or fuck you. Either you can have enough money to buy a punk or fuck you. But meme coins aren't like that. They're an inclusive community where it says, look, if you want to be part of the community, you can just buy it for like 1 cent or whatever the price. You can buy a fraction of a token. So to me, I felt that just like I felt that it was important to teach people how to make NFTs, I felt that meme coins were actually more important. Then we started thinking about a name and people said, why don't you make it Wife Changing Money? And why don't you make it this? And then someone in a group said, look, since you came up with the idea and you're clearly on a gummy, why don't you just call it Gummy? And we all loved gummy because, gummy's like got good connotations. It makes you happy. You laugh a lot. You laugh uncontrollably. You socialize. You eat. You enjoy food much more than supposed to. Like just a cool thing. All right. That's how we decided. That's how we decided to launch Gummy. We went through, then we were going to raise money. And then we decided not to raise money because we said, look, you never ever want to be associated with taking money. Because if you take money and your project fails, you can be a scammer. If you give your project away, then if you give it away, then how can you be a scammer if you just gave away tokens and you kept none for yourself and it's completely auditable on chain, but you don't have a single token? But then we needed to find a way to distribute it. So initially I went onto Twitter and I said, hey, if you want a free airdrop of Gummy, just put your Twitter address in the Twitter. But then I thought, hold on a second, how am I going to capture all these tweet addresses? So then what we said is, okay, what we'll do? We'll create some like very basic things that you need to do. So for example, just use our Banter Bubbles app, which is a free app. And then just accrue points for using it. So the longer you spend on the app, the more points you get. And then we'll take the total number of points divided by the amount we're going to airdrop. And then we'll just airdrop to the users of Banter Bubbles. And then we thought, hold on, what else can we do? So we said, look, if you can complete one of our modules of Crypto School, we'll airdrop you some gummy. If you sign up to any of the if you support any of the service providers that sponsor our shows, we'll just airdrop you free gummy. So we did that. Like we said, if you sign up to one of the exchanges, you get free gummy. They will list gummy for us. So we're one of the first meme coins to get a sex listing immediately in parallel to a DEX listing. So we did a whole lot of these things where we needed to find ways to get addresses from people in our community. Yeah. Sorry, just guys, hold on 1 sec. Someone just walked in quite urgently. Yeah. I'm on Twitter Spaces. Okay. Sorry, guys.
Just a heads up for people listening. The Twitter Spaces is glitching, so a lot of people are not able to log in and stuff. It's crashed earlier today. If anyone's been breaking down the texture, so we are having a lot of issues with Twitter Spaces.
Okay, so
go ahead.
Yeah, so we just said, look, we just needed to find a way, and we just said, look, anyone who uses our app, which is a free app, anyone who signs up to one of our service providers, we'll just airdrop Gummy to you. So we ended up airdropping 10% of the supply originally, and that was one of the advices we got. We got a piece of advice that said, look, don't drop all the airdrop at once. If you do, there'll be selling pressure on the token. Just drop it in multiple batches.